Welcome back to Building Better Basketball, the Basketball Australia Coaches Podcast. I'm Neil Gray with a shiny new job title, the Community Capability and Education Manager for Basketball Australia. Sorry for the gap between episodes, but we've got a few now lined up across some fascinating topics in the next few weeks, not least today. His twin brother has been on the pod before he left our BA team for the Apple Isle and the Jack Jumpers, and he's someone I've been trying to get on for a while now. He's full-time with Basketball Australia as Executive General Manager, High Performance and National Teams. So it's with great pleasure I've finally managed to get a three-time NBL champion, 2005 NBL MVP, two-time Olympian and former Boomers captain Jason Smith. Jason's someone who's a very big supporter of coaching and coach development and has played a big part in the increased access we have been able to share with you in the recent years with the national teams when they're in Australia. And I know for a fact he also last year was coaching in community basketball and not the sexy end of the rep competitions. He was giving up his time to help out lower ranked teams. Smithy, thanks for A, being in the country to do this, and B, giving up your busy time in what I know is an insane planning window for you. Welcome to Building Better Basketball.
Thanks, Neil. Absolute pleasure to be here. Passionate about the space and keen to give any insight that I can provide.
So obviously you are in a new job title, a new role for Basketball Australia. What inspired you to take on the role of the Executive General Manager for High Performance and National Teams?
What inspired me, I guess, was I was involved in Basketball Australia for the last few years as the head of Senior National Teams. So I was looking after the Opals and the Boomers. So I already had a glimpse into the role and what was required and the skill set to do it well. And I'm really fortunate with my background. I've been, incredibly blessed with some of the opportunities I've had. So I obviously played basketball at a high level for professionally 15 years, played for Australia, captained Australia. So I've got a real keen insight and passion for Australian representatives and the teams that participate on the world stage. And then I left the sport and went into corporate and was lucky enough to find myself in leadership roles across a few industries and just learning some really, really beneficial skills from an administrative point of view. So I think the playing background at the international level, the leadership skills that I was able to develop while playing, that coupled with the administrative skills and team management and people management, stakeholder management, running budgets, running a P&L, has really equipped me well to do the role. So that's having the skill set, but now I'm just incredibly passionate about supporting Australian basketball and realizing the capabilities that are currently in the system that would lead to better outcomes and hopefully more medals on the international stage.
So usually you sit very close to me in Melbourne, but when we're recording this, you're down in Canberra at the COE, and obviously that's the hub of a lot of the stuff that happens in high performance, especially when the national teams are playing in international competitions. What is your vision for the future of Australian basketball? I guess everyone's got the focus now on what's coming up in Paris in a few months' time, but I know you're kind of looking well beyond that and starting to plan for the future.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many facets you could tap into in a response. Is it officiating? Is it the SSSM space? Is it coaching? Is it the athletes? But if we primarily look at the athletes to get to an answer, I look at the pathways. There's so many different pathways now. So, and I'm sitting at the COE watching Australia's best talent on the court. But there's so many private avenues as well. There's the US, there's, really good school systems in place, private tutelage, the NBL and WNBL do a really good job of incorporating development programs with their younger athletes. So the main thing is to make sure we get identification as early as possible and help equip the appropriate pathway for that athlete as best as possible. So that's providing additional resources or expert tutelage, opportunity, mentorship, and the like. And I think if we can do that and do it well, and we currently do it well, you'll see the outcomes similar to what we've produced. So that in turn is good, but it's probably not good enough. We've had a lot of fourths on the Boomers, a lot of just missed medals, or we've got a bronze instead of a silver instead of a gold. How do we tweak out the next 5 or 10%? So it's now looking at those additional complementary services that we can provide that we hope can just add that 5-10% that'll get us additional positioning on podium. So it's technology, it's strength and conditioning, it's technique, it's coaching capabilities. How do we continue to grow in that regard? So it's a really difficult space. It's quite complex, but the opportunity is endless, and Basketball Australia is on a really good trajectory at the moment and a big appetite to help improve it.
So you mentioned there a couple of times that the role of coaches evolving within the Australian basketball ecosystem, and it's been a big week for coaches within your orbit as well. We've had Gorge returning to Sydney. We've had the announcement of Mel Downer, an ex-podcast guest, joining the team down at the COE and the women's program. What kind of support do you see within your control, I suppose, the coaches need to excel and match all the resources that you just talked about putting into the players as well?
Yeah, look, I think it goes down, what we said. It's a very complex environment for coaches as well. So, I look at, what I advise young coaches as they're getting in is that be well-rounded, right? It's not good enough just to be an X's and O's coach and be good at, at providing tactics on the floor. It's what do you like with the video editing? What do you like with the data and analytics? What do you like at managing players' egos and personality, different personality types? What do you like at managing, boards and owners and other stakeholders, agents? How good are you in front of the media and the marketing components that you're going to be required to participate in? So there's so many elements that can be improved on and continually worked on in order to help you in your profession, because it's not just about the X's and O's. You have to be good at that. That's an absolute given. But all these other complementary aspects to the role will help you in your career if you want to pursue a career in coaching. So, and I guess the other thing that I've been aware of in the spheres that I'm involved in intimately is that I just see all these coaches, really good coaches, and they're so open to giving guidance and feedback and mentorship, and I encourage young coaches, just reach out. You'll find someone that's willing to help you and guide you on your own journey. So but then take your initiative on some of the elements that I just spoke about that can help you sharpen your skills in other elements, not just on the court.
So with the COE in particular, we've got the coaches down there and they're working in with Lono and yourself and the rest of the team. The players that are outside of the COE bubble that you kind of talked about and those other pathway streams, so whether they're with the NBL and WNBL on rookie contracts, or they're over in college like the Furphys and Amours and kids like that, what do you see, I guess, as your role and some strategies that you have in place to identify and develop that emerging talent that's outside of the COE?
I think One aspect is that identification of talent. Now, talent's not a ready-made basketballer. That's the unicorn. Everyone wants to find that player, right? So that's a given, but it's the anomaly. So how do you identify talent at a young age? And it's really difficult for COE or elite level national team coaches to do that. It's actually rests with the states and territories. So, you know, you're looking for length, you're looking for athleticism, you're not looking for ready-made players. You're looking for that, just that streak of competitiveness and dedication and resilience that's going to help that athlete grow and become, you know, a really good basketballer with the right support and guidance. So, you know, the other aspect that I see all the time in other sports is that, you know, AFLW, AFL, cricket, rugby league, you name it, they're all poaching and trying to get our players to go and participate in their sports. And yet we don't look outside of our own gyms for the right body types and the right level of athlete that potentially could be a future national team player. So I think there's opportunity to reciprocate in that regard and see what level of opportunities there are in other sports, particularly at a younger age where the athletes and the parents are probably more open to trying other sports and giving it a go while they're at a younger age and keen to explore. So they're probably the key areas I would suggest that we need to start thinking about in identifying and then providing the guidance and support the appropriate support networks around them.
So with the national teams, obviously everybody, not just yourself, has got the wish for that immediate success, and you can define success however you want to do it at the Olympics in Paris. But you're obviously in your role having to balance that need for and want for success with the long-term development goals of the national team. And with the boomers especially, we've seen that recently in the Asia Cup qualifiers with a couple of the COE kids being involved. Going forward past the Olympics, how do you see that balance of success versus long-term development playing out?
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive. You have to band them together. So you're always developing future talent with the expectation of success. So in the conversations and the relationships that I have, and you have to be realistic with your expectations of the outcomes. So sometimes it might not be a medal. We're fortunate in our current climate that both men's and women's opals and boomers, men's and women's Paralympics, rollers and gliders, and our 3-on-3 teams are at the very pointy end and the potential to medal in all their categories at the Olympics and Paralympics. So we're in a really, you know, unique period of time. But that said, you still have to be endorsing the emerging talent to get opportunities and exposure and experience on the international stage. The worst thing that can happen is that you've got an incredibly young, talented player and the first international experience of a large tournament is at an Olympic Games. You want them to experience an under 17s or under 19s, or, you know, like the boys that we just had on the boomers in the Asia Cup. You know, you want them to experience that, so when they walk into their first Olympic Games or their first World Cup or World Championship, they've already got 30 to 40 international caps under their belt, so that the environment that they're in isn't overwhelming, that they're actually taking it in their stride and they're able to compete and not get distracted as soon as the ball's been tipped. So that's the balance you've constantly got to provide. And I'm really keen and I'm really fortunate that I've got a coaching cohort that is open to that and willing to participate in that strategy.
With the unique situation that we have in Australia, where we have two separate professional leagues that kind of operate exclusively to each other without real clear delineation, and then Basketball Australia in the middle. How do you go in I suppose being that collaborative relationship person between Basketball Australia and the NBL and Basketball Australia and the WNBL, and then you have players in Europe, and then I know you and the CEO spent some time with the players in the NBA as well. How do you pull all those threads together?
Yeah, I think to start off, there's mutual respect, right? So, it's a league that I played in for a long time in the NBL. So I understand the necessity to have a strong relationship there. There's no difference in WNBL. A little bit different with the European leagues, and particularly with the NBA and the WNBA. However, that said, like, it's making sure that the stakeholders are aware of what's at stake. So, you know, we're always going to be requiring a request for their players to participate in a multitude of opportunities and tournaments. You know, we draw heavily on the WNBL and the NBL to support us in our qualification series, so Asia Cup and World Cup qualifications. And then obviously at the benchmark events of a World Cup, World Championship, and I'm talking predominantly Opals and Boomers here, or in Olympic Games, we rely on the participation of the WNBA and the NBA and the support of the release of their players, insurance of their players. It's an incredibly important aspect as well. So we're fortunate that we've got strong ties. I think there's obviously a very keen understanding of the importance of the relationship, and the respect that we currently have is really strong. There's always going to be a little bit of tension between the leagues, particularly when athletes get hurt, when they're under our guidance and care, and then they go back in an unfortunate circumstances. It happens periodically. It's the nature of the game. So there's always a little bit of tension when you're dealing with their employers, with the clubs and leagues. But in general, it's incredibly strong relationships. Again, the respect between the organisations is very high, and we'll continue to invest in ensuring that we've got very strong ties moving forward.
So you obviously, like you said at the start, you were already in a existing role with BA, involved with the Boomers and the Opals, and now that you've moved into this EGM role, you've taken on the 3x3 and the rollers and the gliders and the Paralympics aspect of that. How have you gone about building those relationships with the not only the players and the coaches in those programs, but also the other stakeholders to get to a similar level as where you were at with the Boomers and the Opals?
Well, I'm really fortunate that Jan Sterling paved the way in this regard. So she was incredibly supportive of the athletes and coaches and staff of teams. She worked tirelessly to ensure that they knew that she cared about them genuinely and supported them in their own endeavors. So I'm trying to replicate that and open a door of transparency in everything that we do. So bringing the players in and consulting them on a lot of the major decisions that we make, so they have a stake in these decisions and the direction in which we want to take the team. Coaches are the same. I'm constantly on the phone to agents and to coaches of athletes that we have, you know, in the NBL and WNBL, and CEOs and you name it. So just trying to provide a level of trust and transparency to ensure that we're looking after their athletes, we actually care about them and their well-being. I'll go back a little bit on the players' side. So just the touch points on the players. So a lot of the guys in the NBA, a lot of the girls in the WNBA, we don't get to see them very often. So what are we doing to bridge those those periods. So there's a cadence of connection that we need to increase. So that's physically going to see them, organizing, you know, Zoom calls with the coaching cohort as well. So it's incredibly important that we just foster the relationship as best we can, understanding the limitations of, you know, professional careers and the tyranny of distance and what have you, but just to try and to make effort to ensure that we're connecting as often as appropriate. And that stems down to, you know, the Paralympic teams, the rollers and gliders, just being visible there, connecting, building relationship, understanding their career objectives and their goals, and trying to help them fulfill those as well. So, yeah, it's a long-winded answer. It's not an easy one either, but basically it comes down to just being genuine and open to fostering a strong relationship.
So we've got two questions left, Jace. The one that we ask everyone that comes on the podcast, if you could ask any coach, whether they're with us or passed on and they don't have to be in basketball, any coach a question, who would the coach be and what would the question be?
Ooh, I was going to say, I'd probably say Phil Jackson, and how he was able to manage that group of athletes in that three-peat period. Like, that's an incredibly talented group with a lot of different personalities. I would have thought there would be a lot of conflict that he would have had to have managed, and it seemed like it was seamless. So the skill set that he had to master that was incredible. And then the second one would be Barry Barnes in the 2000 Olympics. Why did he select me?
He was selecting Darren?
I don't know, but he was obviously a wise man, mate, to select me. But I was forever in his gratitude for selection of my first Olympics. But I really enjoyed Barry. He was a very, really good coach for me and helped guide my career.
So the final question, Jason, is just that I'm sure everyone's intrigued to know what is the next few months like for Jason Smith leading up to Paris?
Yeah, it's pretty nuts, to be honest. There's a lot of administrative work that goes in behind the scenes in order to put an Olympic Games together. It's a beast. But I'm fortunate that I've got a pretty good team around me, managing the Opals and the Boomers, and both the rollers and gliders and 3-on-3 men's and women's. So that makes it a little bit easier. But it's essentially taking care of the administrative requirements, executing on the strategy of preparation. So what are the games? What are the trainings? What's the travel? Trying to mitigate the risks that are associated with all those aspects to get the performance outcomes that we require. And then just trying to keep everyone on the same page and pulling the same direction to make sure that we maximize our opportunity and realize our potential. So, yeah, it's a complex environment when you think about all the stakeholders that are involved, all the different personalities. But the fortunate thing is, once people put on the green and gold, the dedication just shines through. That DNA of being, you know, an Australian representative has not changed since I was doing it. There is a massive passion and sacrifice that's exhibited across all those teams in order to do the best for their country, and it's an absolute pleasure to be a part of it.
Jason, thanks so much for giving up your time today. That was a great insight into, I guess, what everyone's interests are, not only immediately, but also that's going to continue to build over the next few months in the run-up to Paris. So good luck. Thank you, and go the green and gold.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.